Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're really honing in on a super important part of managing rental properties in Sacramento.
Right. We're talking property inspections and all that paperwork.
Exactly. And specifically, how it all ties into security deposits. We're pulling insights from M&M Properties podcast, hashtag 10.
Yeah, the goal here is to, you know, help landlords understand the rules and best practices. Stuff that protects your investment.
And keeps things smooth with tenants, hopefully.
Definitely. It's about feeling confident you're doing things right, especially around inspections, documentation, and those tricky security deposit deductions.
We'll be covering things like wear and tear versus actual damage, what the law says now.
And how solid records are basically your best friend in avoiding disputes.
Okay, so let's jump in. M&M Properties touched on something foundational. A landlord's right to actually enter a tenant's unit in California. Seems basic, but...
But it's strictly controlled. California Civil Code, Section 1954. That's the key bit of law here. It really limits when you can go in.
And why is it so strict?
Well, it's all about protecting the tenant's privacy, their right to quiet enjoyment of their home.
So what are the main reasons you can legally enter?
Okay, so there are basically four main ones. Genuine emergencies, think fire, flood, that sort of thing.
Makes sense.
Then... necessary repairs or services the tenant has requested or agreed to.
Right.
Showing the property to potential renters or buyers.
Okay.
And finally, if the tenant is clearly moved out, abandoned the property, or if there's a court order.
Here's something that I think catches people out. Something M&M pointed out. You can't just enter for a general inspection, can you? Just to kind of look around?
Absolutely not. That's a really common misconception.
Yeah.
California law does not permit entry just for a general checkup.
Even if you write it into the lease agreement?
Nope. That right to privacy under 1954, it can't be waived by the tenant in the lease for general inspections. The law sees it as a fundamental right.
Wow. Okay. So that really shifts the focus away from just routine checks.
It does. It has to be for a specific, legally recognized reason. Now, there are a couple of other minor exceptions, like statute allows for checking smoke detectors or, weirdly, waterbeds.
Waterbeds, okay.
Yeah, but the core principle holds. Entry needs a specific, legitimate purpose listed in or allowed by the code. No fishing expeditions.
Got it. So when you do have one of those legitimate reasons, say, for a repair, how do you notify the tenant? Is it just a quick call?
Usually not. The general rule is 24 hours written notice.
Written. Okay.
Yeah. And that notice needs to be pretty specific. It has to state the date, a reasonable time frame for the entry, like business hours, and critically, the reason you're entering.
And you should probably mention the specific legal reason, right? Like reference the code.
It's a really good idea to do that, yes.
Yeah.
Reference Civil Code 1954 and the specific purpose, like to make necessary repairs as requested. It adds clarity and shows you know the rules.
But emergencies are different, obviously, if there's water pouring through the ceiling.
Right, exactly. In a true emergency, you don't need prior notice. You need to deal with the problem immediately to prevent further damage.
Makes sense. Any other exceptions to that 24-hour written rule?
Well, yes. If the tenant has clearly abandoned the property, notice isn't needed.
Okay.
And for showing the property, there's a slight nuance. If you've already given written notice within the last 120 days that the property is for sale, you might be able to give oral notice for subsequent showings, but written is always safer.
Hmm. Okay.
Also, if you mail the notice, the law presumes it's reasonable notice after 6 days. But honestly, hand delivering or posting is usually better for timing.
So the takeaway is document everything, be clear, and follow that 24-hour written rule unless it's a real exception.
Precisely. Clear communication and documentation are key.
Let's recap that distinction because it seems vital. General inspections are out, specific purpose entries are in.
Correct. No, just looking around. But yes, to entry for agreed upon repairs, necessary services, showing the unit under the rules, or those mandated safety checks like smoke detectors.
And even for those allowed entries, the notice rules still apply.
Absolutely. Proper notice is required unless it's one of those specific exceptions we mentioned.
And M&M's advice was to avoid vague language in the notice, right? Like periodic inspection.
Yeah, definitely avoid that. Be specific. Entry to inspect and service the HVAC system. Or entry to conduct state-mandated smoke detector check. Clarity prevents misunderstandings.
Okay, now things get a bit more complex locally. Sacramento County has its own program, right? The Rental Housing Inspection Program, or RHIP.
It does, yes. And this is important. RHIP applies to properties in the unincorporated areas of Sacramento County.
Unincorporated areas. Got it. What's the purpose of RHIP?
Its main goal is to ensure rental properties meet minimum health and safety standards. It's proactive code enforcement, basically.
So unlike the state law forbidding general inspections, this county program actually requires some form of inspection.
In a way, yes, for unincorporated areas. Landlords have to register their rental properties with the county. And then there's an inspection component. Now, there's a self-certification option.
How does that work?
If the owner or their agent completes a county-approved training course, often through the California Apartment Association, CAA, they can conduct their own inspections and self-certify that the property meets the standards.
Ah, okay. So you don't necessarily have the county inspectors coming out all the time.
Not necessarily, if you self-certify properly.
Right.
But the county can still do audits. They might inspect randomly or based on complaints to make sure the self-certified properties are actually compliant.
And owners can also just ask the county code enforcement to do the inspection.
Yes, that's an option too. And landlords pay an annual fee for this program, the RHCC fee, usually included on the county utility bill.
Are there any exemptions, like for newer properties?
Yes. Properties less than 5 years old might be exempt, and units already inspected regularly under other programs, like Section 8, might also qualify. But you usually have to apply for the exemption.
And even exempt properties could still be inspected if there's a complaint, I assume?
Oh, absolutely. A tenant complaint can trigger an inspection regardless of exemption status.
So that's the Howlands County. What about the City of Sacramento itself? Do they have similar requirements?
Yes. The City of Sacramento also has its own code compliance efforts. Landlords typically need to register their properties with the city before renting them out.
Okay, so separate registration for the city versus unincorporated county.
Correct. And the city likely has its own inspection requirements, fees, and possibly exemptions, which might mirror the county's somewhat like for owner-occupied units or newer buildings.
So the bottom line for landlords is?
You have to check specifically with the City of Sacramento Code Enforcement or the county's RHIP office, depending on where your property is located, to know exactly what's required. Don't assume the rules are the same everywhere.
Right. Okay, moving on. Let's talk best practices for actually doing inspections, maybe like an annual one, even if it's tied to a specific purpose like maintenance. How should landlords prepare?
Preparation is definitely key. First, develop a solid checklist tailored to your specific property.
What should be on it?
Think about structural stuff, plumbing, any leaks. Wow. Electrical systems, HVAC function, safety features like railings and smoke EO detectors, appliances, windows, doors. If it's a multi-unit, check common areas too.
And then notifying the tenant, still that 24-hour written notice.
Yes, at minimum. Check your lease. Some of it might specify a longer period. The notice needs to be clear about the purpose, routine maintenance check, safety inspection, RHIP compliance inspection, if applicable, plus the date and approximate time.
During a lawful entry for, say, maintenance, can you note lease violations if you see them, like an unauthorized pet?
Yes, you can. If you're legally inside for a permitted reason, like fixing a leaky faucet, and you happen to see clear evidence of a lease violation, an unauthorized pet, smoking burns in a non-smoking unit, major damage, unsafe clutter, you can document it.
How should you document that?
Notes on your checklist, and definitely photos. Thorough documentation is crucial.
But you shouldn't address the violation right there and then during the maintenance visit, necessarily?
It's usually better practice to address the lease violation separately. Finish the purpose of your entry, then follow up with a tenant later with a formal written notice about the violation, referencing the specific lease clause they've broken, and outlining the cure period, if applicable. Keep the maintenance visit focused on maintenance.
Makes sense. So after the inspection, what's the next step with documentation?
Write up a formal inspection report, summarize your findings, the general condition, any repairs needed, whether landlord or tenant responsibility, and any lease violations observed.
Photos and videos are important here too.
Absolutely critical. Especially now with recent law changes we'll get to. They provide objective proof of the condition at that time. Date stamp them if you can.
Should you share this report with the tenant?
Yes. Promptly share a copy of the report with the tenant. It keeps them informed and creates a record.
And keeping these records over time.
It's super important. Maintain a historical file for each property, showing the condition year over year. It helps track trends, proves regular upkeep, and can be invaluable if disputes arise later, especially concerning the security deposit.
Which brings us neatly to move in and move out inspections. These seem especially crucial for security deposits. Are there specific legal requirements in Sacramento or California for these?
Yes, California law has some very specific requirements, particularly around move-out. Landlords must offer tenants the opportunity for a pre-move-out inspection, sometimes called an initial inspection.
When does that happen?
It needs to be offered within a reasonable time after either the landlord or tenant gives notice to end the tenancy or before the end of the lease term.
Mm-hmm.
The tenant can request it, but no earlier than 2 weeks before they move out.
Do you have to do it if the tenant doesn't request it?
You have to offer it. If the tenant requests it after you've offered, you have to perform it. But there's an exception. You don't have to offer it if the tenant is being evicted with a 3-day notice, say for not paying rent.
And notice is required for this pre-move-out inspection too?
Yes. If the tenant requests it, you have to give them at least 48 hours written notice of the date and time, unless you mutually agree otherwise in writing.
What's the point of this pre-move-out inspection?
The main purpose is to identify potential deductions from the security deposit before the tenant moves out. It gives the tenant a chance to fix those issues themselves, cleaning, minor repairs to avoid deductions.
So it benefits both sides, really.
It does. It sets expectations and can reduce disputes over the deposit later. You have to give the tenant an itemized list of potential deductions found during this initial inspection.
What about the final inspection after the tenant has actually vacated? Is that legally required?
Interestingly, California law doesn't explicitly mandate a final walkthrough after the tenant leaves, but it's an absolute best practice. You need to assess the final condition to finalize any security deposit deductions.
And what happens if a landlord fails to offer or perform that pre-move-out inspection when required?
It can significantly limit their ability to deduct for damages or cleaning that would have been apparent during that initial inspection. It doesn't necessarily prevent all deductions, like for unpaid rent, but it weakens claims for physical issues.
Okay, so that pre-move-out inspection is a tenant right and a landlord obligation. Definitely don't skip that offer.
Correct.
Let's talk checklists again for move in and move out. How detailed should they be?
Very detailed. A room-by-room approach works best. List everything. Walls, ceilings, floors, windows, doors, closets, light fixtures, outlets, appliances, plumbing fixtures. Note the condition of each. Use consistent grading if possible, like new, good, fair, damaged.
Consistency seems key for comparing later.
Exactly. You need an objective way to compare the condition at move-in to the condition at move-out.
And we mentioned photos and videos before, but they seem even more critical for move-in, move-out, right? Especially now.
Absolutely crucial. And yes, legally mandated in many cases now due to AB 2801, which we need to discuss more.
Mm.
You need visual evidence for both move-in and move-out.
What should you capture?
Everything. Get overview shots of each room, then close-ups of any existing damage at move-in, scratches on the floor, a chip in the counter. At move-out, document the condition before any cleaning or repairs are done.
So before the cleaners come in?
Yes. Document the asset's condition when the tenant leaves. Then, if you're deducting for repairs, AB 2801 will require documentation after the repairs are done, too.
Wow. Okay. Date stamping these photos and videos sounds essential.
Yes. And label them clearly. Living room move-in date, kitchen sink damage move-out date.
Ideally, have the tenant present when you take these.
Ideally, yes, for both move-in and the final walkthrough. Having them sign off on the checklist alongside the photos provides the strongest evidence.
So the core task is comparing the move-in condition to the move-out condition using these checklists and visuals.
That's right. And this is where you need to make that critical distinction between tenant-caused damage and normal wear and tear.
Let's revisit that. Examples of normal wear and tear again.
Things like minor scuff marks on walls from furniture, slightly faded paint or wallpaper, maybe some light tracking patterns on carpet and walkways. Things that happen with normal, everyday living over time. Landlords are expected to cover this.
And damage?
Damage is different. Holes in the wall, broken tiles, heavily stained or ripped carpets, burns on the counter, broken appliances due to misuse, excessive filth requiring heavy cleaning. That's generally beyond normal wear and tear and potentially deductible from the security deposit.
And the move-in documentation is what proves the damage wasn't pre-existing.
Exactly. Without proof of the initial condition, it's much harder to claim the tenant caused specific damage during their stay.
Okay, managing all this documentation, checklists, photos, videos, reports, sounds like it could get overwhelming. What are the options?
Well, you can use traditional paper checklists and file folders, but...
But it's easy to lose things. Papers get damaged. Handwriting might be illegible.
Right, it's not very efficient, especially with lots of photos.
So digital solutions are probably the way to go.
Definitely recommend it. There's property management software out there that often includes inspection modules. Or you could use dedicated inspection apps on a tablet or phone. Even just using cloud storage like Google Drive or Dropbox for photos and scan checklists is better than paper.
What should landlords look for in inspection software or apps?
Photo and video integration is number one, the ability to embed visuals directly into the report. Customizable templates are great, so you can tailor the checklist to your property. Good reporting features, so you can generate professional-looking PDFs. And some even have tenant portals for communication and signing off.
The benefits seem clear. Better organization, higher quality documentation.
Streamlined workflow, easier comparison between move-in and move-out, less administrative headache, and ultimately fewer disputes because the evidence is clear and accessible.
Let's talk about communicating inspection findings. Say, after a routine maintenance inspection, how do you share that with the tenant?
Promptly and professionally. Share the report, even if everything looks good. If there are issues the tenant needs to address, like maybe clutter blocking an egress window, highlight it clearly but respectfully.
Avoid sounding accusatory.
Absolutely. Focus on the issue and the lease requirement or safety concern. Reference the lease clause if necessary. Offer them a chance to discuss it. And, of course, keep a record of this communication.
What about communicating needed repairs that are the landlord's responsibility?
Again, clarity and promptness. Explain the issue found during the inspection, outline your plan to fix it, and give a realistic timeline. Keep the tenant in the loop if there are delays. Follow up after the repair is done to make sure they're satisfied.
So proactive communication builds trust.
Huge difference. It encourages tenants to report issues promptly themselves rather than letting them fester.
And if the inspection uncovered a lease violation, we touched on this, but the communication part is key.
Right. After the inspection, send that formal written notice. Clearly state the violation, reference the specific lease section. If it's something curable, like an unauthorized occupant or pet, provide the legally required opportunity to cure, often a 3-day notice to perform covenant or quit. Document everything. When you sent the notice, how it was delivered, what the violation was.
Okay, let's really focus now on the security deposit itself and its connection to property condition, especially in Sacramento. What are the legal limits on how much you can even collect?
There was a big change recently with AB 12, effective July 1st, 2024. For most rentals now, landlords can only collect a maximum of 1 month's rent as a security deposit.
Just 1 month, furnished or unfurnished?
It doesn't matter. 1 month's rent is generally the cap now.
Are there any exceptions?
Yes, there's an exception for small landlords. If you own no more than 2 residential properties and those properties contain no more than 4 units total that you're renting out, you can still collect up to 2 months rent.
Okay, so small landlords have a bit more leeway.
Right. And the law didn't prohibit taking advance payment of the last month's rent if the lease term is 6 months or longer.
Good to know. Now, the deductions. We know it's for unpaid rent, reasonable cleaning, and tenant caused damage beyond wear and tear.
Correct. And reasonable cleaning means returning the unit to the same level of cleanliness it was at the start of the tenancy, minus normal wear and tear. You can't charge tenants for upgrades or routine cleaning between occupants.
And the timeline for returning the deposit.
Still 21 calendar days after the tenant vacates the property.
And you have to send an itemized statement.
Absolutely. You must provide an itemized statement listing any deductions. And if the total deductions are over $125, you must include copies of invoices, receipts, or bills for the work done or materials purchased.
Unless the tenant waived their right to get the receipts.
Correct. They can waive that right in writing. And if you or your employee did the work, the statement needs to describe the work, the time spent, and the reasonable hourly rate charged.
And now AB 2801 adds another layer to this documentation for deductions, right? The photos.
Yes, that's the huge change coming fully into effect in 2025. AB 2801 mandates photo or video documentation to support deductions for damages or cleaning.
Can you break that down? What photos are needed?
You'll need photos showing the condition before the tenant moved in, photos showing the condition immediately after the tenant moves out before any work is done, and if you make deductions for repairs, photos showing the condition after the repairs have been completed.
So before, immediately after leaving, and after fixing. 3 sets of documentation, potentially.
Essentially, yes, for damage claims. It's designed to provide clear proof justifying the deduction. Failure to provide this visual evidence could jeopardize your ability to deduct.
This really hammers home the importance of that move-in and move-out documentation we discussed.
It's absolutely essential now. Those checklists, photos, and videos are your primary evidence to justify keeping any portion of the security deposit for cleaning or damages. Without them, especially the photos under AB 2801, you'll have a very hard time defending deductions if challenged.
And potentially face penalties for bad faith retention.
Exactly. If a court finds a landlord retained the deposit in bad faith, they could be liable for up to twice the amount of the security deposit, plus actual damages. Good documentation protects you from that.
Okay, so the message is clear. Document, 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 especially visually.
Yes. Detailed checklists, comprehensive photos and videos at move-in, pre-move-out inspection offers, final walkthrough documentation before and after repairs. It's all part of managing risk and complying with the law.
What are the most common areas where disputes about security deposits actually arise?
Wear and tear versus damage is probably number one. Tenants often feel charges are for normal use, while landlords see damage.
Like those carpet examples.
Right, or disputes over the cost or necessity of cleaning. Landlords can only charge to return it to the move-in level of cleanliness, not for a full turnover deep cleaned if it wasn't needed.
Okay.
Delays in making necessary repairs during the tenancy can sometimes factor in too, though that's more of a habitability issue.
Yeah.
But unresolved problems can sometimes lead to arguments at move-outs.
How can good documentation specifically help resolve these common disputes?
It provides objective evidence. If you have a date-stamped move-in photo showing pristine carpet and a move-out photo showing large stains or burns, it's hard to argue it's just wear and tear. Same with cleaning photos show the level of dirtiness beyond normal use. Receipts prove the cost of repairs. It takes the argument away from he said, she said.
What about proactive strategies beyond documentation to just avoid disputes altogether?
Build a positive relationship from the start. Clear communication, being responsive to maintenance requests, treating tenants respectfully, it goes a long way.
Setting clear expectations with the lease and move-in process.
Absolutely. A thorough lease and a well-documented move-in walkthrough set the stage. And again, that pre-move-out inspection is a key opportunity to get on the same page before things escalate.
What if a dispute still happens?
Try to resolve it directly first. If that fails, consider mediation services. Many areas offer low-cost mediation for landlord-tenant issues. It's often faster and cheaper than court.
And fundamentally, just knowing the rules seems critical.
It's paramount. Understanding tenant rights and landlord obligations under California state law, plus local Sacramento ordinances like RHIP or city rules, is non-negotiable. Laws change, like AB 12 and AB 2801, so staying updated is crucial.
Ignorance isn't an excuse, basically.
Not in the eyes of the law, no. Seeking legal counsel if you're unsure or facing a complex situation is always wise. Knowledge is really the key to managing properties legally, ethically, and successfully.
This has been incredibly insightful. It really underscores that managing rentals in Sacramento, especially regarding inspections and security deposits, requires diligence. You need to understand the law, conduct thorough inspections, document everything meticulously, especially with photos now, and maintain open communication.
That's the formula, really. It protects your investment, ensures compliance, and helps foster better relationships with your tenants. Being informed and proactive makes all the difference.
So for everyone listening who manages property here, the final thought might be, how robust are your current inspection and documentation processes? Are you truly ready for the photographic evidence requirements of AB 2801? What's one step you can take today to strengthen that system and safeguard both your property and your tenant interactions in the long run? Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.